there. It's Jean Tiberio, and I'm a nutritionist and a wellness coach. Welcome to Healing Outside the Box. This is episode 108, and I'm calling it, Can We Make a Real-Life Schooltopia Out of Our Current School Lunch Program? Well, yes, we can. Some guy once said that. I don't know, I think he won the Nobel Peace Prize. But he's also correct. And in fact, it's already been done in a school in Bridgehampton, New York. I'm going to take a look at their program for you in this episode and basically suggest to you and to anyone else who is interested in childhood nutrition that we can sometimes just copy what works. And that makes sense to me. So yes, we can. But first, I have to vent about my Boston Red Sox. People listening to these podcast episodes may know that I've been following the Boston Red Sox since 1967. Now, since that was a while ago, I'd like to say that I was following them from the womb, but truth be told, I was 12 years old at the time. I live only 18 miles from the stadium, and I make my yearly pilgrimage, and when I get there, I have a great time. However, watching the Red Sox play the Yankees on TV is a whole different ballgame. Somebody once said that there is no crying in baseball. I believe it was Tom Hanks in the movie A League of Their Own. Saying there is no crying in baseball is like saying that there's no grunting in tennis or that there's no cheating in football. There is so much crying in baseball. There is weeping. There is kvetching. Now, I don't know how many Jews there are in baseball, but there's so much kvetching. Oy vey, is there a lot of kvetching. There's also open sobbing, gasping for breath, amidst a waterfall of tears, and the ugly cry, as Oprah would say. Last night, I was watching the Red Sox play the Yankees at Fenway Park. By the way, I'm still mad about Jacoby Ellsbury going to the Yankees, and I will only let it rest, apparently, until I am laid to rest, and not before. Anyway, it was the top of the eighth inning, and the Red Sox were behind 5-1. I said to my home health aide, I'm so disgusted. I can't take it anymore. Please change the channel quickly. So then I went on to watch some violent TV show about the Mexican drug cartels, and somebody was shooting somebody else in the eye, which, strangely enough, I found more relaxing than watching the baseball game. Now, I woke up today to find that the Red Sox actually won the game with a walk-off home run in the bottom of the ninth. And then, of course, I was furious because I had missed it. Welcome to the life of a Boston Red Sox fan. You know, I actually remember the first time I ever saw crying in baseball. It was after the Red Sox lost the seventh game of the World Series in 1967. Jim Lomberg was pitching. And oh, by the way, I remember all the players on the starting lineup by position. That's how crazy we are here in Boston about our baseball. So we lost the seventh game by a score of 7-2. The next day, I saw a picture on the front page of the Boston Globe. It was a picture of the pitcher, Jim Lomberg, bowing his head while sitting on a bench in the locker room. There was a tear streaming down his cheek. I was surprised to see that great photography of that one tear on his cheek, given the fact that the photographers at that time may have been using a Brownie camera or something. And there have been so many moments of crying since then. People were crying when the Red Sox lost the final playoff game in 1978 to the Yankees. And then, of course, there was 1986, when we essentially had the World Series won, champagne in the dugout, etc., and poor Bill Buckner let the baseball fly between his legs and into the outfield. So I guess the only way to put a lemons to lemonade spin on this is to say that crying is good for us and it releases stress. And that's what this podcast is about. Making the most of what you have. And, oh yeah, the Red Sox have actually won the World Series 3 times since then. Now on to our episode for the day. There's been a lot of talk about improving the school lunch programs, which are, in most cases, deplorable. I guess it's okay to say that word deplorable now. That's my favorite word this week, the deplorables, as well as Trumpathon. So my opinion on the subject is that the whole system around feeding our children at school is deplorable. Plenty of grassroots programs have tried to improve the system with little success. People have tried to lobby Congress and the Senate with little success, or let's just go with no success. Jamie Oliver did an entire TV series trying to improve the school lunch programs. He had a large audience of TV viewers, but the recommendations he made were unsuccessful. In a nutshell, and I say that knowing that our children probably have never seen a nutshell, our government-sponsored and government-paid lunch programs have been primarily centered around junk food for almost 40 years. There has been some positive efforts to get rid of soda machines and fast food restaurants in the schools, but the chicken nuggets made in 2013 still are going into our children's stomachs. Too many deplorables there. And if you've been listening to previous podcast episodes on our healthy gut bacteria, you know that there is damage that junk food does to both our intestinal lining and to our bloodstream. We also know now that all kinds of things could be happening to our children's brains from not only this junk food, but the rising percentage of obesity rates and diabetes. Dare I say it? This is deplorable. I'll give you the links to some of those shows in the show notes where we touched on some of these issues. But today I want to talk about what works. And again, I suggest to you that it could work in your schools, in your towns as well. Why not just use what has succeeded in one place and make it our own? Is it possible? Can we do it? Yes, we can. In a school called the Hayground School in New York, they have a seed-to-table organic gardening program that is working on all levels. Kids are already learning incredible things about how important the quality of the soil is to making our food healthy. They are learning about how to grow vegetables, when to plant, how to plant, when to pick, etc. I'll give you a link to this school's website, and you can look under the curriculum tab for more details. There are two areas of their curriculum that I found interesting. The first was the soil science and gardening curriculum. One day per week, each class gets to go out into the greenhouse and learn about planting from seed and all of the things I just mentioned. This is also a good time to talk to them about composting and about the good bacteria in the soil that makes our plants healthy and gives us vitamins and flavor compounds. It's also a good time to talk to them about climate change, which they do at this school. They talk about soil and water conservation and sustainable agriculture. It cannot be said often enough that our children and our grandchildren are going to inherit this earth in whatever condition we leave it for them. It is essential for them to know this stuff. These greenhouses can be made, possibly by volunteers, with some 2x4 pieces of wood and plastic. In my parents' generation, they used old discarded glass window panes and propped them up so that the sun can shine through. In our generation, we now have window solar panels that can be easily connected to a generator to provide heat at night or electricity for other purposes, such as lights. Now, the second area of their curriculum that I liked was their culinary arts program. Now, I was a numbers person at school, and I will agree with just about everyone that things like algebra are useless to 99% of the population. But what we all do is that we eat. And this has become even more important because of all of our food-related chronic diseases. These kids are actually making their own school lunches with organic produce from the gardens. They also are making their own bread with the help of the cafeteria chef. And yes, I did say chef. And some of these people are willing to volunteer. I've done it in the past, and I've made a few 5-minute cooking videos to show kids how to, say, saute onions in a fry pan or make a stew. Each class has one day a week when they decide what they want to cook for the school lunches. They harvest the vegetables that they want for their meals from their raised bed gardens, and then they cook a full organic school lunch and serve it to both students and faculty. I once saw a documentary by Michael Moore where they looked at this issue of what works in school cafeterias, and he showed that round tables give the kids so much better social interaction. We know that from our homes. If we're sitting around in some fashion, facing each other, passing the bowls, it makes for a much healthier eating experience. So with these classrooms, they get an education in making recipes, which they can use for life. They learn how to cook and bake, and they taste what fresh, delicious, organic food tastes like. They also get a chance to know what specific things they're really good at and what they can do really well. And isn't that part of what school is all about? The first question that I'm sure some people ask is, what will all this cost? The answer I usually give them is, what will it cost to do nothing? What is the cost on so many levels of a lifetime of obesity, diabetes, strokes, heart disease, and a bunch of allergies and GI problems? So many deplorables, and so obvious is the way to fix it. 3 years ago, with the help of only one other person, I went to a local elementary school and did a vegetable planting with the kids. We had a great time, and they were very animated and excited, especially when it came to watering the soil and bringing up the earthworms so that they could put them into their raised bed garden. Even though we gave them their own individual baby shovel, they were plunging their fingers into the soil to plant the tomatoes, spring onions, zucchini, green beans, and a few lettuces. I'll bet those kids will remember that day over other days where they sat in a classroom and stared at the teacher. There is so much learning that can be done with regard to feeding ourselves, and very little is now taught in our schools, at least up until now. I also gave them a 10-minute talk on the nutrition in the vegetables, what the dark greens have versus the reds, etc. And they were raising their hands to answer questions about the vitamins and interacting with each other as well. They were outside on a nice sunny day, and I'll bet it didn't feel like school right at that moment. So what we can do to help these children to learn how to feed themselves healthy, affordable food is up to us. If you're interested in getting involved, you can contact the people at the Hayground School, or you can email me on my website contact page, which is healingoutsidethebox.com/contact. And I'll respond to your questions or give you the links that you're curious about. You can look at the details about their programs by going to hayground.org/culinary arts. I'll also leave you the links to the letsmove.gov program on school gardens and the Slow Food USA program. But again, if you have any questions, don't hesitate to email me or drop me a note on my website contact page. It's been a pleasure doing this episode because I'm so excited about the future for our kids with these new school lunch programs. That's all I have for you today. Be well and stay tuned next week for another episode of Healing Outside the Box.